This conference is being recorded.
This is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network, and you're listening to Loving the Earth Pollution Free Radio. Joining us today is Dwayne Winters, U.S. EPA's Dioxin Policy Project Director. Good afternoon, Director Winters.
Hi, Don. Good to join you.
Yes, it's great to have somebody from EPA on our program. Let's get started now with our first question. What is the history of EPA's efforts to eliminate open waste burning? Let's begin with what caused the agency to focus on the open burning pollution source.
Well, I think this is one of those places where science actually does an excellent job of driving policy. When we were starting the process of the dioxin reassessment, we had noticed that there were a limited amount of data that had looked at sediment cores and looked at dioxin levels, which gave a historic trend in terms of dioxin. And that data was intriguing in that it showed that dioxin levels were fairly constant at fairly low levels up until about the 1920s. In the 1920s, they began to grow rapidly. And in the late 60s, they then reversed direction and began to go down. One of the first things we did was go out and sample a lot more lakes to see if, in fact, this was a general trend. And this was also done in Europe. And the lakes we sampled were high-altitude lakes in which what we were seeing was kind of the background levels as opposed to something that was affected locally. When you look at this data and you try to figure out, well, what is it that happened in the late 60s, early 70s that could have caused this very marked reversal in the environmental levels? It was at that time that we eliminated most of the burning dumps in the United States that were tied to municipalities and replaced them with landfills, and we eliminated apartment building incinerators, basically the uncontrolled burning of waste in urban areas. And so that we saw as a pretty good signal that the uncontrolled burning of waste was a major contributor. We said, gee, it would be great to look at burn barrels. And it turned out that, in fact, a project had been started that was jointly between EPA and the New York State Department of the Environment, in which they were doing chamber studies of burning trash in a burn barrel. So we expanded on that pilot work to do a number of tests that gave us a pretty good idea of the range of dioxin emissions which came from burn barrels. We published that data in the peer-reviewed journals, and then that data then became the basis for the emission estimates in the inventory, and showed us that once we brought the municipal medical waste incinerators and the large industrial sources under control, that burn barrels begin to move to the top of the list in terms of sources of dioxin.
Well, you've given us a very extensive and, you know, well-stated answer to that question. Now, the U.S. EPA's dioxin the U.S. EPA's dioxin inventory figures strongly in what you've just presented to the public. What were the steps which led to U.S. EPA beginning to produce a dioxin inventory?
When we started the dioxin reassessment, we went out for early public comment and peer review of kind of the organization of the reassessment. And the scientific community and much of the technical community all urged us to try to do a systematic inventory of dioxin sources, a quantitative inventory. And so the whole idea was to get that early input. So in the first draft of the reassessment that came out in, I think that was 95, we had our first effort at trying to do a comprehensive inventory of dioxin sources. We chose two reference years, 1987, and later we then chose 1995. An inventory has to have a reference year, that is, you're trying to look at the annual emissions from a bunch of source categories over a given period of time. Well, we generally choose a year. And that has evolved. We've now done 87, 95, and we've done the year 2000.
And as you said, open burning is now at the top of the list for dioxin emissions to the environment, and that's where it stands in this U.S. EPA dioxin inventories, just in case anybody wants to take a look and, you know, convince themselves of how significant the open burning source is now.
Now, it's important to know that the reason it's moved to the top is not that the emissions from open burning have increased. It's that we've had a very successful program in controlling the large industrial sources of pollution. And when we control municipal incinerators, medical waste incinerators, cement kilns burning a hazardous waste, these categories, and they come down and backyard burning stays the same, then you get to a point in which they pass each other. So we've had a 90% reduction in overall emissions from the sources we can quantify. But now that we've brought down those large sources, then burn barrels move to the top.
Yes. How was an estimate made of total U.S. open burning dioxin emissions?
Well, with a fair amount of guesswork, as with many of these emissions, because one of the characteristics of the emission inventory is you can never go out and directly measure annual emissions. In each emission estimate, there are kind of two things which come together. You bring together what you call an emission factor, which tells you how much pollutant is released for some unit activity. In the case of burn barrels, it's the mass of dioxin that is released per mass of waste burned. So milligrams or picograms of dioxin per ton of waste burned. And then you have to estimate on a nationwide basis how much waste is burned in backyard burning. To come up with the emission factor, we go back to those studies that I talked about in which we developed a standardized waste which was similar to the waste of typical municipal waste. And we would burn that in a barrel in which we could measure the emissions. We did that over and over again, finding that, you know, we had a variation of about a factor of 10 from one run to another trying to burn exactly the same amount of trash at the same time. But it gives us a pretty good estimate of what the mean value is for typical waste. So that then gave us the emission factor. Coming up with the activity level was a little more complicated. We looked at the total U.S. population. We backed that down and identified the population that's in non-urban areas. And we've done that in two ways. One is to look from the census information, what they call the populations outside the standard metropolitan statistical areas. Another more rigorous one was to go census tract by census tract. But we come up with a rural population of between 50 and 60,000 people. So that's the population that's potentially burning trash, but not all of them are. There were a couple of good surveys that were done that talked in interviewing people and whether they burnt or not, and that allowed us to come up with an estimate that about 40% of the households would actually burn trash. We looked at the per capita refuse generation, and we used the national average for that. All of those then allow us to eventually calculate then the total mass of trash that is burnt in the rural population. And that then became the activity level that we used against that emission factor we had before. None of these numbers are you know, highly precise in the fact that what they're probably were estimating here for a factor of 2 or 3 during what the numbers are. But these same kind of uncertainties exist with many of the other estimates, and we're very careful when we're doing the inventory to put a confidence rating around these numbers so you know when you're comparing a number of low confidence or a number of higher confidence.
Okay. Yeah, certainly while you speak, I'm thinking, and I'm thinking about the fact that one portion of the open burning activity, which would be releasing considerable quantities of dioxins, would be this burning of refuse heaps, this dumping of waste on the ground and, you know, not being in a barrel and then having it lying out there in the elements and the weather, you know, for a considerable period of time and then burning that on farms and in other, you know, places where people do that type of burning. And that probably wasn't included then in the dioxin emissions of the open burning that you guys were placing in the dioxin inventory, right?
We're fairly specific to say that what we're trying to estimate here is the open burning of household waste.
In barrels.
The stuff that's generated. It could be in barrels. We've done some tests in terms of what would happen if it was not in barrels but in open piles. The numbers are similar. But it's kind of that regular systematic burning. We've not tried to deal with the generation of agricultural waste or any industrial open burning that might occur. Those are outside of that estimate, and we really don't have the kind of information that would let us estimate those other categories. So in the inventory, we deal with these other kinds of categories in a non-quantitative manner. We try to identify that they are there. We talk something about what we know about them, but we don't try to generate a number just because you can generate a number if you don't have any confidence that it's realistic.
Right, right. Well, I'm sure that that confidence level is going to change on this ag burning kind of activity just because the EPA has done some other assessment work, you know, wherein some data is now being gathered on dioxin emissions and dumps that are burnt in Mexico. That's great to see that's coming along.
From an international standpoint, this open burning, and in particular the open burning in dumps in large piles, may be a major and significant source of dox on a global basis. So there is a lot of focus now on various elements of the international community to get a better sense of what the actual emissions are. It's very hard to measure the emissions from a burning dump. The methodological and technical problems there are quite significant. But we have made some progress. There is work that's been done in Mexico in which we've both done sampling at the burning dump and also burnt those same wastes within the chamber studies. And the results of those studies have been submitted to peer-reviewed journals. So I'm hoping that within a few months, we'll be able to have public results.
So then we'll find out what the emission factors are.
Well, that represents the sampling of two sites. And it's in part a proof of concept of the measuring methodology. There's a larger effort within UNEP that'll begin to expand that database. I suspect there's a high degree of variability within burning dumps and the conditions that are there. So the first two data points simply begin to start us in the process of compiling a body of information that will let us more accurately estimate emissions on a global basis.
Sounds good. Is EPA currently working to reduce emissions from any other dioxin sources?
Well, we've had a very active program for the last two or three decades. So we have an active program in terms of controlling emissions from municipal waste incinerators, which was the largest source category we had, from medical waste incinerators, from cement kilns, including those that are burning hazardous waste. We've had controls put on pulp and paper facilities that use chlorine bleaching. And those have all resulted in a greater than 90% reduction of overall emissions from these categories that we can look at. We've also focused on backyard burning because backyard burning is very different than these industrial sources, which are centralized. Backyard burning is a decentralized activity. It's an activity which is primarily tied with individual behavior. That's not something that one can control at a federal level. You look at the levels of government that deal with decentralized problems, and that's state and local government. So our efforts here have been very much to provide technical assistance, scientific information to state and local governments as they begin to develop their programs. And in particular, we've tried to take and match people who have had successful efforts at the state and local level with others who are trying to develop their programs so that one community can learn from the successes and the difficulties of other communities. And we've seen major progress that has been made, particularly in the New England states and the Great Lakes states, in terms of state and local government taking on the job of backyard burning.
Well, we can certainly say that about New York State. That good study that you and the New York State Department of Health and New York State DEC did that you referred to early about the, you know, the emission factor for the burning of the waste in the barrels, that has certainly been a huge part of what led New York State to just recently, in fact, it's not done yet until it's on the books, and on October 14th, here in New York State, we will finally have a ban on all open waste burning, both agricultural and backyard barrel burning. Ban on this open burning practice here in New York State. That's really, you know, congratulations. You know, I'm honored to US EPA and DEC and DOH for, you know, getting that, you know, in place here at this time now. And you've led me into the next question very well too. How has the Great Lakes Binational Toxic Strategy figured in efforts to reduce open burning activity, Duane?
The Great Lakes program is one in which it kind of unique to that region. We had both the states and the Canadian provinces that surround the Great Lakes and EPA working together to deal with a variety of problems, water pollution, air pollution, that were looked at from a regional standpoint. And they had a panel that was looking at dioxin, and the primary focus that panel decided that where they could make a difference was looking at backyard burning. And in this case, we had very active participation by our Canadian colleagues as well as our state colleagues. And they've generated a website. They've done much to have exchanges of information. And I think it's been one of the real success stories. I wouldn't call it an EPA success story. It's a success story of all the government entities that were involved in trying to collectively address what they saw as the dioxin environmental problem that they could have the most impact on.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the way that that open burning subgroup of the dioxins and furans working group, you know, has come along with GLBTS. It was really nice to be a participant on those work groups, and I met a lot of good activists that were involved with government on those working groups. Explain to the listeners the significance of the ongoing dioxin reassessment to the issue of open waste burning elimination.
Well, the dioxin reassessment is an effort to generate a state of the science document on dioxin, and that's dioxin toxicology, dioxin exposure, dioxin sciences, to bring dioxin source science, bring all of those together. Now, that's an important thing to periodically pull it together when you've got an issue or a piece of science as complex as dioxin. But it has not affected in particular the pace of the activities that the agency has had because in addressing the risks of dioxin, because it is a reassessment, that it is reassessing earlier work, and that earlier work has served as a basis for us to move forward with those regulatory and non-regulatory programs. And here with the focus on burn barrels, you can see that the technical assistance and the work we've done with the state has continued while that reassessment is underway. When the reassessment is completed, it will serve as a basis for then assessing the risk management activities, both at the federal level, state, and local level, to see whether there are fine adjustments that need to be made. But it is an effort to try to move in parallel with improving the science, while at the same time we're moving to try to solve reduce the exposure to dioxin.
Yeah, it's good that government has taken that, you know, that approach to keep working on getting the levels down in precaution, regardless of, you know, how final some of these documents are. It's truly good to know that there's action being taken as well as study and you know, drafting of documents being done.
The reassessment is really trying to fine-tune the science. There's not a question of to whether or not dioxin is a highly toxic substance. There's not a question as to whether exposure takes place. But it is important that since dioxin is very toxic but exists in very, very small quantities, of really trying to refine our ability to assess that risk and assess what sources are important, that's where the reassessment becomes important. We've still been able to move forward with the large sources and the large exposure pathways.
Let's discuss the part of the dioxin reassessment that, let's discuss the part of the dioxin reassessment that addresses dioxin exposure cancer risk. How many cancer cases will be caused by current levels of dioxin exposure?
That's a very simple and straightforward question, of which there's no simple or straightforward answer. We don't know. But let me explain why we don't know. The way in toxicology we try to describe cancer risk is a thing called the cancer slope factor, which is a probability of cancer. And we've tried to use what's called an upper bound cancer risk. That is, it's the level of exposure which results in a particular risk in which we know that number, that's the highest the risk could be. The actual risk will be less than that for most individuals, and for some individuals the risk will be zero. You can't use that number and multiply it times the average exposure of the population and come up with the total number of cancer deaths. But it is an extremely useful number, given the uncertainty you have around the risk, to be able to compare from one chemical to another and to be able to make risk management decisions in a consistent manner from one problem to another problem. But it doesn't really lend itself, and we've not tried to make an estimate in terms of total number of cancer deaths. What we do know is that dioxin, and when we look at the probability of cancer, it's at extremely low doses that we begin to see the likelihood of cancer. So it is a very, very toxic compound. At the same time, it's a compound that exists in the environment in exceedingly low quantities. So you still got to use the quantitative science of risk assessment to understand whether, in a particular situation, dioxin exposure is of concern or not of concern. And that's one of the reasons why we continue to try to refine and improve the science, so it improves our ability to make those kinds of calculations and estimates.
Let's go through this one more time here, a little more detail, you know, just to make it very, very clear to the listeners what we're, you know, what we're trying to explain to them here. Say, you know, based on, say, the numbers, you know, the amount of exposure that was considered to be taking place, say, back, you know, say, 5 years ago, you know, earlier stage of the dioxin reassessment, say the 2003 draft of the dioxin reassessment, when the amount of exposure was considered to be approximately 1 picogram per kilogram body weight per day of this dioxin TAQ. You use the slope factor, you know, that EPA had come up with, and do the math, and what you come up with is about 200,000 Americans, you know, getting cancer because of dioxin exposure alone. Explain to me and the listeners why that's not, you know, why that 200,000 wouldn't be the correct number, you know, but based on those earlier dioxin numbers, you know, not the questions about those dioxin numbers, but just about why.
Yeah, because the estimate, it is complicated. What you know is, if you do that calculation, and I'm not, I'll take your numbers since I'm not doing them.
It comes up with a 1 in 1,000 excess cancer.
Yeah. What we know then is the number of actual cancers over a lifetime will be less than that, because that's an upper bound number. That's saying that for any given individual, the risk will not be greater than that. When we look at a population, then the risk is going to be less than that. What we don't know is how much less than that it's going to be. And this was one of the issues that was raised by the National Academy of Sciences, that instead of doing an upper bound cancer risk, one could do what you think is the average risk within the population or what you would think is a lower bound risk within the population. Historically, in doing environmental toxicology, we've not done that. We've not been sure exactly how to do that. So we've always used this upper bound number, which talks about individual risk, but doesn't talk about the risk to a population. I'm not sure whether that helps you that much.
Well,
Bob,
I think it's part of the answer, but also what I'm thinking is that, say, to use the total U.S. population as the number to do the math with, once you've come up with that, you know, see, basically the cancer risk slope factor was 1 times 10 to the minus 3, so 1,000th, and then you get that 1 picogram per kilogram body weight of the exposure. You multiply those two together, you come up with 1 in 1,000 excess cancer risk due to dioxin exposure from average exposure to dioxins in the U.S. But the problem with using the whole U.S. population to multiply that by to come up with how many people are going to get cancer is that not all Americans eat animal fat foods to the degree of which is considered to be average according to, you know, U.S. FDA's dietary surveys. So truly, if we were to take the number of Americans who consume animal fat at this average level and multiply that by the 1 in 1,000, then we would have a really good estimate of the population numbers for how much cancer can be expected to be caused by dioxin exposure here in the U.S. And using those old numbers, and according from what I'm starting to hear from EPA and FDA, it looks like, you know, some people are thinking that levels have gone down to the point that it might be, say, even as low as 0.6 picograms per kilogram body weight per day exposure for the average animal fat consuming American. So there certainly are some questions here.
The reason, yeah, I we may be losing our listeners here.
I hope not.
But
they got to stick with it.
The reason that it's an overestimate is not in the exposure number. It's that the risk number is not calculating the risk to the average individual. It's calculating the risk to the most sensitive individual, the most likely to respond. It's the highest risk number that we think could exist. So when you apply that to the population, you know that the risk to the population is much less than it is to the most sensitive end of the responders. Separate from that is the question of exposure.
Well, certainly we're making the progress here. I'm just, you know, thinking as you talk, and thinking back on the epidemiology that went into creating that cancer risk slope factor for dioxins, and my understanding was that they looked at industrial cohorts, people who had been exposed to dioxins when they were manufacturing certain pesticides that ended up having the dioxin contaminant, you know, the 2,4-D and the 2,4-5-T. So it seems to me like that there was certainly not only this matter of sensitivity involved. You know, they looked at how long the people had worked in those industries and got an estimate of, you know, the people that got a lot of dioxin, the people that got less, and the people that got none at all. And, you know, looked at the cancer rates among those groups of the cohorts and then did the math and figured out their slope factors. And then EPA adopted, the way I looked aside in the dioxin reassessment, a relatively middle of the range slope factor based on those epidemiological studies. So it is very complex. What we're talking about is very complex. But it still does come down to the point that we have a better understanding of how much cancer is caused by dioxin exposure than for many other chemicals, and I'm certainly glad that that has led government and activists to do a lot of focusing on dioxin as far as preventing dioxin pollution and preventing cancer. And that's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think we've done a great job of covering this ground.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this with you, and I hope your listeners go away with a better understanding of the importance of trying to address backyard burning as one of the important sources of dioxin.
I'm sure they will, Duane. Thanks a lot for being with us, and I hope you have a nice day.
Thank you. My pleasure, Donald.